When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome into this new edition of UAP Weekly. I am Stephen Diener here on the Unidentified Alien Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me here today because this one, I'm glad I was able to do this here today. Kind of last minute, actually, and I really appreciate Nick Pope, who is on the show today, for doing this last minute. I was trying to get together with him, and it worked out for this week. You know, very busy, busy schedules on both of our ends, actually, so I'm happy to say that. Nick Pope will be joining me here on the show today in just a minute, because we are going to discuss everything that's going on. The congressional skiff from yesterday that kind of left a lot of people disappointed, including the Congress people who were included there. So we're going to get Nick's take on that. And I'm really looking forward to asking him about everything going on in Peru. You know, we've spoken a lot about that. I've spoken a lot about that with you here on the show, the reports coming out of Peru, all the strange things that are being seen there. Really excited to get his take there and to get his take on, well, Ancient Aliens, right? Because, of course, everybody knows Nick Pope from the famous show Ancient Aliens. He's on tour right now with Giorgio and all the guys from Ancient Aliens. So we'll get his take on what came out of Peru as well that we saw at the Mexican congressional hearing, the, you know, Peruvian alien mummy, if you will. So a lot to discuss here today with Nick. Really excited to get his take on all the stuff and talk to him about it. So bring him on here now. Nick Pope, of course, again, you know him from Ancient Aliens, former head of the British Ministry of Defense, and just all around good guy. Very thankful that he's able to join the show here today and discuss all this with me. Thanks again, Nick. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Yeah, absolutely. So, man, a lot has gone on, actually, since the last time we spoke. So I felt like, you know what, today feels like a Nick Pope day where we can get together and kind of update on a lot of different things going on. The first one being the most recent, this apparent, you know, confidential meeting behind closed doors, the skiff with, you know, some of the Congress people, Anna Paulina Luna and Jared Moskowitz and people like that, Robert Garcia, sitting down with the DOD, but apparently not much came from it. What did you take from that yesterday?
Yeah, very interesting. When David Grush testified alongside Ryan Graves and David Fravor to the House Oversight Committee some time ago, a lot of people will remember how he kept saying, "I can't answer that question in an open forum," and variations of that theme. And then he said, "I can only really discuss this in a skiff." So SCIF, obviously Secure Compartmented Information Facility, basically a place, a secure room. You know, people think of the shielded rooms in embassies where the CIA all get together, that kind of scenario, free from electronic eavesdropping, all of that.
Right.
So the key thing about yesterday, though, that might surprise people is that David Grush was not present. This was, you know, so it was a kind of follow-up, only it wasn't. And representatives Burchett and Luna and others had said, well, you know, let's get into a skiff. But to go into a skiff without David Grush, when David Grush had been the one saying, you know, "I can only reveal this to suitably cleared people in a skiff," meant really not much was going to happen. And that's the takeout we got. Of course, a number of media outlets, I think, were on hand afterwards. You know, the usual thing, stick the microphone in the face as they come out of the the room and say, hey, what happened? And the answer was not a lot.
Yeah.
DOD IG just really made no, from what I understand, no significant revelations. And so there are still question marks over who is actually cleared to be briefed on what. So you can get anyone you like into a skiff. You can actually get, I mean, you don't even have to have a security clearance to get into a skiff. You can be signed into one as long as there's no classified material available for that an uncleared person might see. So a skiff was never a magic bullet here. And and so the short answer is that yesterday was another step on the journey, but really to get resolution of the claims that David Grush made, we need to get him into a skiff, but it must be with people who have the high security clearances that he feels he can reveal this information to. And that may literally be the Gang of Eight. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think that does seem like the main thing, doesn't it? Which kind of brings me to my next question. What did they expect differently? When I say they, I mean, you know, Representative Burchett or Luna or Moskowitz, who, you know, the, kind of these main faces that have been involved. I mean, they know that they don't have these clearances. I mean, I understand that the optics of it, right? That these contracts or these secrets or secret, you know, technologies are being hidden from the U.S. Congress from oversight. And that's a really big deal. But at the same time, if they don't have the necessary clearances, should they have expected this to be, you know, to turn out any differently than it did?
Well, that's a really interesting point. I think there are two points that I would make in response to that. Firstly, maybe they hoped that if they asked the right questions and pushed hard enough and specifically drilled down into, for example, are there legacy programs covering crash retrievals and reverse engineering? Perhaps they hoped that they would get a response along the lines of something that either directly or indirectly confirmed that, but then said, you know, we can't give you the details because you don't have the sufficient clearances. But maybe they knew full well that that wasn't going to happen. And maybe they deliberately set this up. I mean, these are all smart people.
Right.
Maybe they deliberately set it up so that the question has now been asked and left hanging, and that people like us are now asking it and saying, well, what's next? What do we, the question is this, what do we need to do to move this forward that we are not currently doing?
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny you say that because kind of leads me into my next thought, which was Tim Burchett did an interview after this, you know, this meeting and everything. And they asked him, hey, you know, what do you think the next steps are? I don't know. Listen, he seems like a guy that gets things done, right? I mean, he's been kind of a pit bull with this issue, and he's really gone full steam ahead and it's gone further than I ever thought it would. But he says next steps would be, his goal is to have another hearing like we had with David Grush and so on, but with, you know, DOD contractors and, you know, people like that, guys from Lockheed, guys from Raytheon, and to have that type of open hearing like we saw with the witnesses. Is that a pipe dream, Nick, do you think? Or is that something that they could realistically actually work out?
I think that's doable.
Okay.
But again, it depends. I mean, there's people, I think, you know, you and I talk about this very sort of comfortably knowing the system. But I think people that maybe are less familiar with the procedures and the protocols don't realize that there's two ends of the line here. It's not just, it's at one end of the line, it's who have you got giving the briefing? And whether that's the DOD IG, whether it's the ICIG, whether it's David Grush, or whether it's a number of other whistleblowers, are they read into these legacy programs if they exist? So that's the one part of the equation that you need. But the second part, to marry this up, you need to know that the people receiving the briefing, where, you know, congressional representatives actually in the room, they have to have sufficient security clearance and need to know. And that may be, that may entail both parties, the briefer and the briefee, both being satisfied that each of them are read in to these programs and have the sufficient clearances. And only then, at that level, can party A talk to party B about what they know. And it's you know, so you can have people with the highest clearances in the nation, but if the other side of the table doesn't have them, it's no use to you.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's a good point. So does it, you know, on the surface, it seems like Congress is being stonewalled, right? You know, we've heard the representatives say that themselves. They've used that word, that they feel like they're being stonewalled by the DOD and such. Is that the case, though, or is it just that they don't have yet the right combination? They're playing the game to get to the right combination of having the right people in the room.
I think that's right. I'm never a fan. I mean, look, I served for 21 years as a civilian employee at the UK Ministry of Defense. And sure, we always talked up good news and played down bad news.
Right.
But constitutionally, you don't lie. Or rather, there are very, very few circumstances where it's constitutionally acceptable to tell a direct lie. Mm. And I mean, you know, I can get into a couple of examples just because it's quite fun.
Sure.
But devaluation of the currency is one example where if you were put into a situation where you were asked, are there any plans to devalue the currency? It is constitutionally acceptable, certainly in the United Kingdom, to tell a direct lie, because if you actually do have a plan, it would cause a run on the pound.
Yeah.
and economic chaos. So that's one circumstance. The other circumstance is if somebody is arrested and is not an intelligence officer but an agent, and the question is put, is this one of yours?
Mm.
And confirming that would get them killed. It is acceptable to say never heard of him.
Right, right.
You know, so and in those circumstances, there are usually multiple cutouts anyway. But I'm just saying, contrary to what the UFO community and the conspiracy theory community often seem to believe, we don't go around telling lies on a daily basis.
Hmm.
We spin, we play up good news, we play down bad news, but we don't lie. And I think, you know, when I look at these people, I see decent, honorable, truthful people. That's why most people join government, the military, the intelligence community. I recognize that some people are watching this and rolling their eyes. I get it. I get it. But, you know, I'm just telling it how I see it. And I think those people who go in and brief are being entirely sincere. And they either are not read into those programs themselves, or if they are, they know the person sitting across the table from them isn't. And that's why I say you need both sides of the table, not only to have the security clearances, the need to know, but to know that each other has them and be 100% confident about that.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And that's, you know, the formula, right? You got to have the right formula. And
hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I'll ask this before we move on, because I know our time is limited here today and we want to get to a couple of other things. But I'm just wondering, kind of theoretically speaking, playing off of what Representative Burchett says, where he would like the next step to be to have, you know, a type of a hearing where you have these DOD contractors, right, sitting on the stand, so to speak, like David Grush did and everybody else. If they do that, do we get anything out of that? Or is it going to be more of the same, like where David Grush had to sit there sometimes and say, well, I can't really go into that because, you know, there's different clearances. I mean, I feel like even if we get that hearing, it might turn into, well, I can talk to you about that in a different setting. I can't talk about it here.
You're absolutely right. And this is the catch-22. People want and openness and transparency. So that, like, you know, let's have a public hearing. But yeah. The moment you have a public hearing, obviously, the moment you hit anything classified, doesn't even have to be particularly highly classified, you just get, I can't discuss that in the open session. So that's the catch 22. I think it may literally take either someone on the Gang of Eight to say, we want these whistleblowers in a skiff to talk to us, and then we'll decide and look into it. And it may take that, or at the top end of the spectrum, it may literally need the President of the United States in his capacity as Commander-in-Chief to say, I directly order the declassification of any UAP-related legacy programs, and I further order that any information obtained as a result of such legacy programs be disclosed in open sessions to Congress.
Those would be big steps. So I guess,
huge.
Yeah,
immense.
Like world changing, like, you know, unprecedented. So we'll see. I have a feeling it's going to be, you know, more along the lines of baby steps, which I'm sure you agree with.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just going to be a chipping away process. So I feel like we are further along than we were last year. So we'll see how much further along we get as time goes on, I suppose.
Yes.
But speaking of that, Nick, actually, you know, we talk about these congressional hearings and, you know, settings like that. There was one after the one that we had here in the States where they had in Mexico. I'm sure you're familiar with Robert Salas. I know that you are. I had him on about a month or so ago because he was there with Ryan Graves as witnesses to speak at the UAP Mexican hearing. And he was there to see the unveiling of the mummy, so to speak, of this, you know, small alien that was supposedly brought from Peru. And I asked him about that, you know, what was that like in that moment, you know, to be in the room? And he said everybody was shocked. Nobody knew that was coming. But since then, and I want to get your opinion on this, of course, being, you know, of the ancient aliens and everything that's, of course, you specialize in and you're on the tour, which we'll get to before we're done here today as well. Are we looking at a scenario where we are looking at some type of ancient alien ancestor just because of the tests that have been done on this thing, where they have verified at least that we're looking at an actual skeleton? What do you make of all this?
Well, I'm a little bit more cautious on this story, and you know, with choosing my words carefully, I'll say there's a difference between somebody claiming that a scientific analysis has been done and has produced results X, and actually having that written up in a scientific paper that's then peer-reviewed and published in a journal like Science or Nature. And anyone can say, oh, we've analyzed this, scientists have looked at it, and it's the real deal. And that may or may not be true, but there are all sorts of potential confounds here, even assuming that the people are being truthful. And look, let's assume, you know, let's take the moral high ground and assume that everyone is being open and honest about this. Even if that's true, one can get DNA contamination. I mean, you pick up a child skeleton, a genuine 1,000-year-old child skeleton. DNA can degrade over time. Then you as a researcher touch it with ungloved hands. And somewhere, you know, even if people are wearing gloves at the event, it's easy, when particularly if you're transporting something and a customs official says, no, if you want to bring this in, you have to take it out. You know, I have to take a look at this, put it through a scanner, whatever. You can get mingling of DNA, contamination of DNA. So look, I mean, this is something for sure, but whether it's a genuine child skeleton, whether it's a mixture of human and animal bones, whether there's some model making that's been brought into the fray, maybe even by our ancestors. I don't know. And like I say, until not just claims are made of scientific analysis, but until we actually get that analysis peer reviewed and formally written up and published, it does not pass it doesn't clear the bar, so to speak, in terms of scientific evidence. So look, I would love this to be true.
Sure.
I really would, but I'm not yet sure. And I know that I haven't spoken to Robert Salas since any of this, but I know that Ryan Graves was very disappointed because he felt that this was a misstep. And I think I tend to agree with him on this. Whatever the truth of these mummies, this was a publicity stunt. It was the key takeaway, of course, of this event. Whereas I think people like Ryan Graves and certainly myself hoped that the key takeaway would be now the Mexican Congress is engaged on the defense, national security, and flight safety implications of UAP, just as the US Congress has been for the last few years. If that had been the outcome of this event, I think everyone would have been very happy. But it's all now just mummy gate.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think you're right. And that is that was the unfortunate part about it, because we still don't really know what to make of what we're looking at. But so much of the message got lost, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was the tough part. What have you seen, Nick, as far as the ancient alien theory is concerned? What have you come across in all the years that you've been looking at this and talking about it where you can point to it and say, you know what, we should be talking about this, not the supposed mummies?
Well, you know, although I'm on Ancient Aliens and I'm one of the regulars on the show, they tend to bring me in for the modern UAP stories, government aspects of this, pilot sightings, radar operators. So I'm less well briefed on all of this than, say, Giorgio Tsoukalos, David Childress, or William Henry. But I mean, of course, I spend a lot of time with them, not just shooting on the show, but doing Ancient Aliens Live, the touring stage show, and just talking to these guys. I mean, they're so super bright and knowledgeable on this. They put me to shame, but I think it is some of the mysteries of the ancient sites, whether you're talking about the Great Pyramids at Giza, whether you're talking about Pumapunku, whether you're talking about Stonehenge, and it's all about the alignments and the mathematical and geometric knowledge encoded into it. But it's also, and you know, Travis Taylor is who served, of course, as the chief scientist on the UAP task force when Jay Stratton was director. Travis talks sometimes about the engineering of some of these sites, whether it's Stonehenge or the pyramids, but Baalbek, those sorts of things. And he says that we would struggle even today to move some of these blocks. And then when you look at some of the sites, for example, in South America, some of the stone is so tightly fused together, you can't fit a dollar bill between it. And when I look at something like that, and when I look at, and I've heard William Henry and Travis Taylor talk about, for example, images from the temple walls in Egypt of the Ark of the Millions of Years, sometimes called the Ark of Eternity, and look at the way in which there are similarities between that and representations of how scientists now, theoretical physicists, think we might open a wormhole, for example. It's uncanny. And even someone with a skeptical viewpoint like myself has to reappraise my views and say, that's interesting.
It really is fascinating. I mean, we could talk about that for hours, all the subjects when it covers everything that goes back to ancient times. But I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. The thing that's always kind of got me when it comes to the ancient scenario is the mathematics that's involved with it. I mean, that doesn't happen by accident, you know?
No. Mathematics is the universal language. It's how we'd communicate with extraterrestrials. And it's how maybe, even if we can't understand the perspective sometimes of our ancestors, what it does tell us is that they were super smart and we're able to understand complex ideas revolving around engineering and mathematics and geometry. But as Giorgio Tsoukalos poses this question, is it really so hard to postulate that just as we all now, being hopefully super smart and things, but we all have teachers, maybe they had teachers too. And who might those teachers have been? Everyone has a teacher.
True. That's a good point. You know, you put it that way. Someone had to teach them something. So yeah, it was so fascinating. Appreciate the work that you guys do on that show, because it always gets you thinking, you know?
Yeah. And that's the thing. Ancient Aliens, whether it's the stage show or whether it's the TV series, it doesn't preach to people.
Right.
It asks the question, you know, what if, could it be?
Mm-hmm.
And if you go away thinking about something, talking about something, debating it, even if you disagree, that's a good outcome for a live show or a TV show. If it gets you thinking and questioning and bouncing points off of each other, it's done its job.
Yeah, 100%. And that's, I kind of take that philosophy myself when it comes to what I do on my show. So it seems that's always the best way to go. Like you said, not preachy, just put it out there and, you know, let people make up their minds. I want to stick in South America real quick before we go here, Nick, because there's something really interesting happening, intriguing, kind of mystifying, that's happening down in Peru and now into Brazil, it seems, about these luminous figures that have been seen that are, you know, supposedly even coming in contact with villagers in Peru and zapping them, some of the witnesses are saying. I mean, there's some unbelievable tales that are coming out from there. You know, Ronnie Vernet is down there. That's another guy who was at the Mexican hearing. He's been down there and investigating this whole thing. I'm sure you've been watching it from afar, maybe even talking to people about it. What do you make about all these strange sightings down in South America?
It's absolutely fascinating. I will confess that because of my current focus on the whole congressional situation, I've not looked into this as closely as perhaps I should have done. But yes, I mean, what a fascinating intersection, perhaps, of the modern UAP phenomenon with, I mean, and this ties back to what we were talking about ancient aliens with, often, you know, when you look at indigenous peoples and their myths and their legends, and you look at the intersection and you say, well, you know, what parts of this are literally true? Mm. What parts of it relate to mythology? And what part of it is a true phenomenon, but interpreted, whether it's indigenous people in South America or people in the Western world? Whoever we are, we interpret any experience we have, anything, normal or paranormal, through the lens of our knowledge, our culture, and our belief system. And so what's fascinating about this is that just as we think that the UAP phenomenon is a very homogenous thing, that it's very structured and everyone's sightings are the same, something along the lines of this happens to teach us just how varied and multifaceted this phenomenon is. Does that reflect cultural differences around the world, or does it reflect a difference in phenomena? Now, people like researchers like John Keel and Jacques Vallée looked into this variety and, you know, for decades, and there's no definitive answer, but again, just as why it was frustrating in a sense that the Mexican congressional hearing got overshadowed with the mummy situation, instead of using it as an opportunity to get Mexican lawmakers engaged. Well, you know, what I want to hear is I want to hear that the Peruvian government, the Brazilian government, other governments in South America are engaging on this and trying to find out what's going on. Because there's no substitute for getting boots on the ground in your own country and talking to people. I think the indigenous people, for example, in Peru, who are largely having these experiences, will talk to Western researchers and reporters in one way. But they'll talk to, for example, there are plenty of indigenous people in the Peruvian government and military and intelligence community, and when they talk person to person, maybe that's how you get to the truth about this. So I think there are important questions to be asked about this, but sometimes it takes the right people to ask them.
Yeah, no, you're right. And it's a fascinating situation because something is going on, right? I mean,
oh yes. And I mean, my understanding is that the translation, I mean, it literally is face peelers.
Yeah.
And so there's a dark side to some of this. And again, if there's a threat and if an aspect of this phenomenon or phenomena, if we're talking about different things, is hostile, whether it's overt hostility or whether it's just inadvertent harm caused by interaction with this phenomena. And we've seen that, for example, in relation to UAP radiation sometimes, then we need to know.
Yeah.
And but also, again, it's just, pardon me, it's just another reminder why we don't want to be too US-centric on any of this.
No, you're right. It's a global thing. I mean, and I think sometimes people kind of forget that this isn't just, you know, a US issue. This is for the entire world. And it's also something that's, I think, you know, we shouldn't lose sight of the possibility that maybe this is some type of human operation as well. You know, I think that's a fair question to ask. Is this some type of human operation where they're using some type of advanced technology for whatever reason in that region? We don't know, but something's being seen. You know what I mean? People are
something's been seen. Something is interacting with people. As you say, let's not take anything off the table until we have more data on this. And again, going right back to the first Office of the Director of National Intelligence preliminary assessment on UAP in June of 2021, let's always remember that there isn't going to be a single neat answer to this that explains everything. We are likely dealing with a multiplicity of phenomena here and explanations for this, some conventional, others maybe not so.
Yeah, I think it's a good way of putting it. And I know before you go, because we're about to get you out of here, Nick, we were talking about the tour that you're on, the Ancient Aliens tour, because it's been a fascinating discussion. I wish we had more time, but we'll do it again another time. But the Ancient Alien tour you guys are on now, this is still going, right? Like, you still have dates coming up.
Yes, we've done about 30. I think we've got another 20 or so in the calendar looking ahead over the next few months.
Awesome.
We've got 4 next week. And then 4 the week after that. So November, very busy. AncientAliensLiveTour.com for details of the shows. It's a 90-minute live in-person stage show. We tour around the nation. It's Giorgio Tsoukalos, William Henry, David Childress, myself. Travis Taylor is with us for some of the shows. Obviously, he's off at Skinwalker Ranch for a lot of time, but he's joined us previously. He's going to be there for the 4 Florida shows that we're doing. And we discuss everything from ancient mysteries to the modern UAP developments. And we always try and keep really, really current. So, for example, at the last show, we talked about the most recent congressional hearings. I'm sure we will next week, we'll give our take on what happened in the SCIF yesterday. So we try and be really up to date with this. We like to say that it is both informative but entertaining as well. And as you can imagine, when the 4 and sometimes 5 of us get together with our different areas of expertise and our different personalities, there's a little bit, shall we say, of banter. Not just in the margins of the show, but it has been known to happen on stage too. We do sometimes have a little bit of fun at each other's expense, and we're all friends and colleagues, of course. But things get a little bit fun and interesting sometimes. So AncientAliensLiveTour.com, and I hope people can come along and see what the buzz is about. People love the show. I mean, we're getting some full houses. We're you know, between 1,500 and 2,000 people turn out each evening sometimes for some of these shows. We go into beautiful theater venues. So yeah, people seem to really, really enjoy it.
No, that's awesome, man. That's great to hear. You guys are killing it with that. I'm really happy it's working out. It sounds like a great show. I mean, hopefully maybe I can make it to one of the Florida dates. I'm down here in South Florida.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, I would love to try to get to one of those. It sounds like a lot of fun. And just in case, you know, people don't know where to follow you on social media so they can follow along with what you're doing, how do they find you again?
Well, my main social media platform that I use is X, formerly known as Twitter.
Yeah.
So there I am at Nick Pope, M-O-D, which stands, of course, for Ministry of Defense. So at Nick Pope, M-O-D.
Awesome. All right, Nick Pope, thank you so much for jumping on here today on UAP Weekly and for stopping by and just discussing all these current issues that are going on. Really appreciate it. And hopefully we can talk again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Stephen.
Yeah, you got it. Great guy there. Always really enjoyed talking to Nick Pope. So knowledgeable and just puts a really good perspective on everything I've always thought. So really appreciate him coming on here again today. And yeah, there's just a lot of topics there. I know some of it frustrating when it comes to the government stuff. That's always going to be the issue, right? So I'll continue to look into that. You know I will when I talk to all the different guests that you know, bring on here on UAP and just through my own research. There's always something going on behind the scenes, and that's where I do my best to keep you up to date on everything that I'm being told and that I am seeing. It's an adventure, that is for sure, but that'll do it for now. I will keep you updated on episode 75 of the traditional UAP. I have some plans for that. Hopefully very soon I can bring that out to you, so I'll let you know what's going on with that one. And of course, I'll, like I said, keep you up to date on everything happening. That's what I always try to do all the time here on UAP Weekly and on social media. So you can follow me. You can follow the show at UA Podcast 850 on Twitter/X and on all social media, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram. So you can follow the show there. And if you have anything that you want to say where you don't use social media, because I am aware not everybody is on social media, which I'm actually kind of jealous. I wish I wasn't, didn't have to be on it so much. But you can send me an email if you want, if that's easier or preferable for you. It's sdieneruap, that's sdieneruap at gmail.com. You can send me an email there. I know I see the emails, by the way. I'm not ignoring anybody, just so you know. If you send me an email, I'm doing my best to get back to you. So please be patient. I'm really sorry. I wish I was better with some of the things on my plate and my time and getting back to people really, really quickly. Unfortunately, I just get distracted by so many things, but I will get back to you. I try to get back to everyone with every message that is sent my way because I appreciate all of you. None of this is possible without you taking to me into the show, like, you know, the way that you have. So until next time, don't forget to, you can download and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. However you're doing that, you can just keep it up there on all the major platforms, Apple, Spotify, and all that good stuff. But again, thank you so much. That'll do it for today on UAP Weekly. I will talk to you again very soon and keep you updated on everything going on through social media and all that good stuff as well. It's Stephen Diener here on the Unidentified Alien Podcast. I'll talk to you again soon. Thank you.